Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, 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 my friends. The sun is actually out. Heard it was supposed to rain here in Philadelphia, but it hasn't done that today so far, and I'm going to an event after this. So I hope the rain holds off. But I want to welcome all of you to Blog Talk Radio's and Blake Radio, because we also air over on Blake Radio as well as Blog Talk Radio, to Off the Shelf for this Saturday, the last Saturday in April 28th, 2012. Thank you so much for being here with us. It is an absolute joy to have you here. For those who are our many, many loyal listeners who've been tuning in to Off the Shelf, we are headed into our eighth year on the radio. For those of you who've been here with us so many of those years, or maybe even all of those years, thank you, thank you, thank you. For those who are tuning in for the first time, let me introduce myself. I'm your host, Denise Turney. And as I always tell you, I'm coming to you live from the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And again, I thank you for your support. And I encourage you, don't let another day pass before you pick up a copy of my new book, Love Pour Over Me. It's a story that recounts the different tumultuous yet triumphant life experiences that Raymond Clark, an outstanding track athlete and very intelligent, a guy who wins a scholarship to a prestigious university, where he meets a motley sort of friends, each with an intriguing story of his own. And just when Raymond thought he was free from his past, he finds himself pulled into an unresolved murder, and his efforts from his childhood, the pain he experienced as a child, to go unscathed by romance, they also threaten to keep him from the one woman he's truly loved, the one woman he was born to love. Pick up your copy of Love Pour Over Me at any digital retailer today. The book will be available in print in about a week or two, and I'll let you know as soon as that comes out. But you can get it now at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Ingram Digital, iTunes, Google Reader, etc., etc. And you can start and join Love Pour Over Me today. And now let us go and meet our very special off-the-shelf guest. Our special guest today is Marlene Banks. Marlene is the ministry director at Lifeline Mission of the Gospel. She has a theology degree from Rhema Bible Institute. She is also the author of the book, Ruth's Redemption. Again, that's Ruth's Redemption. It's a new book scheduled to market in February. Well, it already did. It came out February of 2012. Which is still a new book because that's only about 2 months ago. Marlene is currently participating in a virtual book tour hosted by Ty Webbin Creations, one of my favorite creative firms out here. Welcome to Off the Shelf, Marlene.
Hi, how are you? Glad to be here.
I am absolutely blessed and looking forward to today's interview. I've seen your book. When I've been on the internet doing my, whether it's research work for clients or whether I've been marketing my own book, Love Pour Over Me, I've come across Ruth's Redemption. So I'm very interested to hear what you share with us and our many listeners here at Off the Shelf this morning. To begin, and there's just so much about your book that I'm interested in, particularly, and it leads into the first question I'm going to ask you, the time period that you set your book in. I think years ago, I don't know if people always created a book that was in a different time period than they lived in. My thought is no, but I always think how much research goes into that. So my first question is, why did you choose, Marlene, to set Ruth's Redemption in the 1800s? We're talking over like 200 years from what today's present time is.
Well, I'm a very low-key history buff, first of all.
Okay.
And I set out to write my first historical romance. And so considering the history of African Americans, I thought that the slave era was a crucial point in our history in this country. So that's why I picked that period.
Wow. So have you always been interested, since you were like maybe a young person or a child or a young woman, with those events? Let's say if you didn't write a book, but have you always had an interest in that time period. A lot of people don't even really too much think about it, but have you always had an interest in that period in our country's history?
Well, that's a good question, because I never had a strong interest in it until Roots was out.
Okay.
When Roots came out, it piqued my interest in the slave era. But today, I really didn't think Ruth would be very popular, because I didn't think people cared about it, especially the younger generation.
Right.
I didn't think they were all that interested in the slave era. So I'm pleasantly surprised that people still have an appetite to learn about that crucial period in American history.
Wow, yeah. And if we don't either learn from the past or don't let it go, it continues to impact us and influence us. I think it does.
Yes.
It does benefit to learn about it. How much research, oh my goodness, we're going back like 200 years. How much research did you do for the book? Did you talk to people, certainly that didn't live in that time, but could get you as close as possible, even if they can only take you back 70 years? You're going back, you know, as close as you can. Did you do that? Did you go to libraries and just dig through books, listening to any audio tapes, watching any videos that were available from that time period? How much research and what type of research did you do as you created Roots Redemption?
I had to do quite a bit of research, and I didn't really talk to people. I pulled on my own memory of the older generation, like my grandparents. I did a lot of reading research of slave-era documentation, of other slave-era novels I read. I even, at the point when I decided to definitely do a slave-era historical, I bought a DVD of Roots. And I basically did reading research and just sort of like kicking in your memory of things that you've seen in movies and so forth.
Okay.
I also did online research.
Wow. Is there a lot out here on the internet? I know it's a lot of Roots.
You've been surprised. There's quite a bit.
Wow, because Roots got a lot of people tracing their own personal roots. And there's a TV show that comes on. I can't remember the name of the host, but he traces people's family roots back on the show.
Henry Louis Gates.
Yes, yes, yes. And they're shocked. They're shocked to learn,
yes,
you know, you're actually related to such and such and so and so.
Exactly.
They're shocked. At some point, we're all connected. But many think everyone of African descent in America was a slave early in the country's history, but this isn't the case. There were Africans who, well, some people say Africans were here even before Christopher Columbus and the Europeans came to the country, that Africans, you know, lived in America when Native Americans populated the country more broadly. And it's just a shame what happened. This has happened to Native Americans. Somebody asked me who was the most discriminated and people made to be invisible, I would say Native Americans.
I agree.
They have African Americans beat by a long shot.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And one of the reasons is because their numbers dwindled almost to nothing.
Yeah.
Where our numbers grew. And if people know the history, which I learned during my research, is that Native Americans, they actually tried to enslave the Native Americans first. We were the second choice. We weren't the first pick. They tried to enslave the Native Americans, but they couldn't, because the Native Americans knew the land. They were constantly escaping, and once they escaped, they couldn't find them. They couldn't get them, and Native Americans would not procreate in captivity. Some of them would starve themselves to death. They shut down. They wouldn't procreate. So that experiment failed. So the next choice was, okay, slavery was very prominent in other places of the world, like Europe.
Yeah.
And so they said, well, since it's, you know, prominent in Europe and stuff, let's bring the African slave to America. And that's how we got here as slaves.
And also in the Middle East, slavery was
that.
Yeah, slavery was also practiced in the Middle East. It was in a lot of different parts of the world, but here in America, it was extremely brutal. But it was practiced in a lot of different parts of the world, and it probably goes on to some extent to.
Actually, it was brutal everywhere. Even in Europe, it was brutal also.
Yeah.
I think it lasted the longest here, though.
Yeah.
It lasted longer here in this country. But slavery was, like you say, in the Middle East, and that's something else I learned in my research, that actually the first people who instituted African slavery was the Arabs.
Yeah.
And at first, the Europeans had to purchase their African slaves from the Arabs. And what happened was they decided that, well, why are we buying it? Why don't we just go capture our own?
Mm.
Paying them money, we'll just go capture our own.
You know, I don't want to get off topic. When we
learn so
come
much.
When we come to see one another, not as human beings, but as dollar signs, and we do that even today with a lot of marketing and promoting and social media. It's almost like you don't even think you're talking to a human anymore. Just buy my book, buy my CD,
absolutely,
buy my product. We're humans.
Yes.
Actually talking to human beings here. So you don't have to look at people like they're dollar signs. Why did you include free and enslaved characters? And I love that you did that. I love that you did that. But why did you decide to do that in Ruth's Redemption?
Because I think that was the makeup of the African Americans at that time. There were free African Americans. The majority were slaves, but there were sprinkled amounts of free African Americans. So I just wanted to make a realistic, true picture of what the population was like at that time.
Okay. Now, this question really is one I'm really interested in hearing your response to. When I read the synopsis for Ruth's Redemption, this question popped up in my head. Is this based on real-life events? I mean, did you change? I know you maybe changed names or whatnot. Is it based on a real-life event, a story you read about, or maybe a combination of real-life events or people? And if not, what process did you use to create and develop the book's characters?
Ruth's Redemption is a fiction with the real-life event of the Nat Turner Rebellion. That is a true
Okay.
But the rest of it is totally fiction.
Okay. Wow. Very interesting. Very interesting, and I'm thinking about Harriet Tubman, a book I read about her. She's one of my heroines, and she was supposed to have been involved in the Nat Turner incident, but she was a very spiritual woman, and that's how she never got caught and never lost anybody on the Underground Railroad when she led the way. Something just told her not to go. Then it wasn't supposed to turn out the way it turned out, from what I understood in reading the book about Harriet. But she could have been involved in that, and something in her spirit said, "Don't go," and she didn't. But you know, there's just so much about these stories that you have to dig and research to find out more about. Can you tell us about Ruth? What's her background? And what's going on in her life at the start of Ruth's Redemption?
At the start, she's on the slave auction block.
Mm.
Being sold. And she's a breeding slave. She's a young woman who was used for a breeding slave.
Mm.
Old enough. And she's a very bitter woman.
Wow. Oh my goodness! You know, when I hear these, when I hear what happened during slavery, and then I hear how people say African Americans are such and such a way, it's almost like, do you know you actually conditioned some of us to be that way, and now you actually coached it, conditioned it to happen. You actually shaped the clay, and now you're saying, something's wrong with the way the shape of the clay, and you did it.
Well, you know,
shaped it that way.
Things that bothers me that a lot of the younger generation say they don't care about slavery anymore. They're not interested. Not just the younger people, but what they have to realize is slavery shaped African American culture. Our culture came out of an enslaved culture. We cannot get away from that. We can be as prosperous as we want to be. We can live up on the hill, drive a Bentley, speak perfect English, and have 44 degrees. But our culture still came out an enslaved condition. And those things that happened within that slavery affects how we react as individuals, as a community, within the family, whether we want to admit it or not.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time when we were very communal in the African American, and that came from slavery. It came from people raising people's kids. Like they say, it takes a village. That came from slavery. How we eat. Look at how we eat. And those of us who still eat pork, and I'm one of them, it came from slavery. How we eat came from slavery. How we relate to each other came from slavery. A lot of good things came out of slavery, the closeness, the supporting each other, watching each other's back. But also bad things came out of slavery, like skin tone prejudice.
Yeah.
Which became prominent in the African-American community, the light skin versus the dark skin. There are a lot of things about our culture that came directly as a result of slavery. So we should look at it, not be bitter about it, not get crazy about it, don't dwell on it, and don't keep beating the drum, but look at it, examine it for what it is, and take the good and try to change the bad.
Yes. Yeah. Who is, Marlene, who is Bo, and what makes him different? Now Ruth's been, you said, a breeding slave, so she's just used, you know, guy has sex with her and she gets pregnant and
so they can have, again,
not looked at as a human, being looked at as just help me make more money. You're not even a human being to me anymore. But who is Bo, and what makes him different with the background you just gave us from her, which I think she would probably not want to let anybody get close to her heart. But who is Bo, and what makes him different from other men that Ruth met?
Well, Bo is a free black man, but he was not born a free black man. He was born a slave. He was freed when the master died and left it in his will to free all his slaves. The master was a godly man. He had wrestled with owning slaves, and before he died, he left in his will that all his slaves be freed. His sons honored that wish. So Bo was freed. Also in the will, Bo was given a piece of land. Bo was very dear to the master, and Bo's parents and family had all died. So Bo was a free black man with a farm. That he actually turned into a small community of other free blacks.
Wow.
That was freed along with him from the Maitland farm and other blacks that he was purchasing with the intent to set them free.
Wow. Yeah. Now, was Ruth, I don't want to tell the whole story.
I know. It's hard not to, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't want you to. I'm just curious as to how Ruth and Bo met. And that's
in the very beginning in the prologue. They met at that when she was on the auction block. He bought her.
Okay, that was my guess. I was guessing that, but I said I didn't know if they met later in the story. I didn't want to give that away if it was sort of like a cliffhanger. Who are some of the minor?
Let me state that this story came out of two things. I wanted to. I picked stories in the Bible, and I sort of changed them into a story, but it's actually a very different story, but loosely based on the book of Ruth in the Bible.
Okay.
With Ruth and Boaz in the Bible.
Yes. Okay. Who are some of the minor characters that readers are going to love in Ruth's redemption? And what is it about these characters that helps to move the story forward?
There are a lot of characters, actually. Some of the favorites will probably be Naomi and Mara.
Who is Naomi? Are Ruth's parents alive?
Naomi is Bo's mother-in-law. She's his first wife who died. She's his first wife's mother.
Okay.
And she's sort of like the matriarchal character in the story.
Okay.
There's Ephraim, her husband. There's Mara, another free slave that was raised with Ruth on the Maitland farm.
She was raised with Ruth?
No, I mean raised with Bo, excuse me.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay.
On the Maitland.
Now, are Ruth's parents and Bo's parents still living in a story?
It's left open about Ruth's parents.
Okay.
Because she was taken from her mother.
Hmm.
Both parents and family and siblings are all dead.
Oh, okay. Wow. Mm. How long did it take you? And even before I ask you that question, I'm hoping that Ruth and Bo have a wonderful relationship. Again, I don't know how the story is.
I'm going to tell you to read the book to find that out.
Okay. Oh my goodness! His former plantation owner, because I don't think nobody can own a human being. His former plantation owner, who thought he owned land, you can't even do that. But he set them free because his conscience. He had a conscience, and he used it, and it worked on him. So he set them free. And Bo comes into land, which, you know, land even today is equivalent to having money. And he, the fact that he built a community, that he actually buys slaves to set them free, is a very interesting twist that you put into Ruth's redemption, which one that I appreciate. But so Bo, he's industrious. He's seeing the fruits of his labor, so he can go. Buy a slave, set the slave free, build this community, and he can see the result of his efforts. Ruth, she's been stripped away from her family, and she's just been made to one guy after the next, just having sex with her. Maybe she thinks that's all men are good for at that point, because that's all they're coming into her life for. And then she meets Bo. I am just so pulling for this woman to finally receive some real, true love.
It's
real love
story.
It is
a touching love story, but it's not without its problems. I will say that. There's a lot of romance. There's history, but there's also romance, and there's a lot of human issues, just issues about people and relationships. I write from a very psychological point of view.
Yeah, and then from what all she's gone through, you couldn't just gloss it all over and make it be perfect. You couldn't do that. You couldn't do it. I think in good writing, it has to mirror real life as much as possible. How long did it take you to write Ruth's Redemption? And what was the process that you used? Did you use an outline? Did you do character sketches? I mean, you're going back so far in time. How long did it take you to finish Ruth's Redemption? And what was the process like for you in actually creating the story?
It took me, I would say, about 6 months.
Wow. Surprised.
Everyone says that. But let me clarify that statement. It was a time when, during that time, I had surgery.
And okay.
I was home, recuperating. I couldn't do much else but stay home and write. So I could put a lot of hours into my writing, which we're talking 6 months, but we're talking 8 to 12 hour days, right? And that's 6 days a week. So in months and days, it might not sound like a lot, but in hours, it was.
Wow. Man, you really put your head down. And you know what I wonder?
And that was after research.
That's what I was going. Is that your first novel? Because I want to ask you, if it's not your first, to do a little contrast, and I was going to ask you, do you think a writer can dig deeper into the heart of a story when they do focus 8 to 12 hours a day and just really get deep into the story, or then a writer could just write maybe 1 to 2 hours a day?
Well, Ruth was not my first written story. It's my first published story.
Okay.
In contrast, Ruth was my first historical romance. This was my actual first try at writing a historical romance.
Okay.
I had written murder mystery. I'd written romance. I'd written contemporary romance, contemporary murder, contemporary humorous, contemporary chick lit. So this was my first stab at historical.
Okay.
Now, in terms of how you can do it best, I think it's different for each person according to their lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
to their ability. It depends on how you see what you want to do. In other words, if you focus better after just a couple of hours, and then after a couple of hours, your mind starts wandering, then you
okay. stop.
Some people are like that. Some people focus and zero in, and once they do, they're locked in for the long haul. That's the way I am.
Okay.
I focus, I zero in, and then I'm locked in because at that point, my goal is to finish what I started. Some people do better with the small increments of 2 hours, 3 hours here, 4 hours there. And if you're working a full-time job outside the home, that may be all the time that you have.
Right.
For me, I can focus better with the long stretches.
Okay. Okay.
Do you think it's individual according to the person's attention span, according to their lifestyle?
Yeah, that's a good, you know, and I actually was thinking the longer you could dig deeper into it, but you make a very good point. Each of us is different. So if you start to feel a lot of strain when you after like 2 or 3 hours, then stop. But that you said, and I think that was, yeah, whatever feels right for you, you don't want to make it a big strain. Because I've heard of other writers who literally just lock themselves away. And I'm going back years when
I've done that.
The classics.
I've done that.
And they just write.
That's what I do. And basically, when I get into serious writing, I call my friends and say, I'm in writing mode. Don't call because I'm not asking.
Wow.
I don't want to talk on the phone. I don't want to.
Wow.
I don't want anybody. I close that door. I remember telling my husband, look, if the house isn't on fire, don't knock.
Oh, now, my goodness.
Don't know.
Yeah, I've heard of writers.
You pick my train of thought.
Yes.
And once you get into a character, and it depends also on what type of writing you're doing, because when I've written a nonfiction. When you write nonfiction, it doesn't require as much for me as it does writing fiction. Writing fiction, I'm constructing characters. And when you construct characters, you get inside that person. Like I said, I write from a psychological point of view. So I get inside the mind of that character, inside the body. All of a sudden, I feel like I'm one of my characters' names is Ruby. I'm Ruby all of a sudden. So when I'm in Ruby, it's almost like acting. You're acting on paper. I'm acting like Ruby. So if somebody calls me, talks to me, I jump out of Ruby because I'm back to Marlene. So now I have to work hard again
after
the conversation is over to get back into Ruby so that I can write what Ruby was feeling, what Ruby was thinking, what Ruby was doing. So it's like a secondary form of acting in your mind. And you get into that world, and that expands for each character and to the whole environment that you have written. This world that you create on paper, you get into it. All of a sudden, you're living in that town. you're dressing those clothes, and your mind clicks into that. And if I need quiet, some people write with music, and all, I have to have total quiet. And when I get into that mode, I'm in that town, I'm in that place, I'm that place. So when I'm there, too much distraction, too much outside noise kicks me out of it. Once I'm out of it, if I walk away or go away to do something, then I have to come back, get back into it. Now, usually I can write a paragraph, and once I start rolling, because I write in the Holy Spirit. It's not me writing. It's the Holy Spirit writing through me. And as I start rolling into it, I get deeper, deeper, deeper into it.
Okay. Do you plan on writing a sequel to Ruth's Redemption to show what happens later in their lives, or in if they have children, in any of their children or grandchildren's lives?
Well, I put an epilogue at the end of the story. There's an epilogue who sort of takes care of that. But you never know. It may happen. I don't know. At this point, I haven't planned to.
Okay.
But it would be possible, according to, because I can always write a novel elaborating on what the epilogue said.
Yes.
It's always possible. It depends on the readers. If they demand a sequel, I can do it.
Do you have any plans to publish any of the other novels that you've written now that you've gotten the experience of publishing and marketing Ruth's Redemption?
Yes. My hope is to publish all of them.
Okay.
I have two more novels coming out this year.
Very good.
In June 1st, Son of a Preacher Man will be out.
Son of a Preacher Man?
Yes.
Okay.
And the sequel to Son of a Preacher Man will be out in October or November.
Wow.
Son of a Preacher Man is a historical romance also, taking place in the 1920s in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Wow.
And it revolves around, like Ruth revolves, has the Nat Turner Rebellion as the true historical event. Well, Son of a Preacher Man has the Tulsa Race Riot as the true historical event.
Now, where is Ruth's Redemption? Is this set in Virginia?
Virginia, in the Tidewater area, around Southampton.
Okay. I wanted to ask you, has novel writing, has it always been your first love, or did you start out writing poetry, songs, et cetera? And when did you start writing? When did you know you were a writer? How old were you?
I was very young when I was bitten with the love of writing. I loved reading, and I was so young I couldn't write cursive. I had to print out little stories. I am an innate storyteller. It's inbred in me. This is what God put in me. That's why I coined myself as God's author or God's storyteller.
Okay.
I was so young, I was in elementary school, but I couldn't even write cursive yet. And I used to read the they still have the golden books, and then I used to write out my own little golden book story. Then when I got a little older and was reading Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys, I had to write out my own little Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys story on those black and white composition books. My parents used to buy them for me. I've always, even in elementary school, when we were given like 10 spelling words a week, and at the end of the week you write a paragraph using these 10 spelling words. Everybody else would just write da da da. I wrote a little story. I got a story out of it, and I remember my fourth grade teacher says, "We always get such a good story." She would make me read mine every week. So that was in me from the beginning.
Okay. Wow. I knew when I was a kid, but it is some people. It's that later in their life, when they start writing, and some people, it's when they're very very young. And I wanted to congratulate you.
And I didn't write as I got older, and life happens. There were long periods where I didn't write, but the love of it and reading was always there, and I would always go back to it. I never really considered it for a career or to do it professionally. It was just something I loved to do. Only in the last, I would say, 15 years or so, maybe 18, that I decided that I wanted to take a stab at trying to do it professionally. You asked me a question earlier about do I write outlines and characters.
Mm-hmm.
I do none of that.
Okay.
And I don't recommend that because I say do it the right way because I'm probably doing it the wrong way. I'm really self-taught. I didn't really have instruction on how to write novels. I sort of just like whatever I could learn, I learned as I went, trial and error. And as I said, I write in the spirit.
Okay.
The Holy Spirit hits me with a story. Gives me a story, might give me a title. Sometimes I get the title first and the characters follow. Sometimes I get the characters first and the title will come later. Sometimes I get just the beginning of a story. And then once I start writing, it flows and it's like the story takes over. And you hear a lot of writers say that. The story begins to write itself.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I have one idea. I don't do outlines.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea. I start off with one idea, but once I start writing,
yes,
the idea will come and the story
takes
a
turn. Oh, my goodness.
You know what I'm sure you know,
yes,
what you're talking about.
I'm familiar with what you're talking about.
And so I say the story writes itself, but I write in the spirit because the spirit leads me straight. I mean, I don't need all that outline and carrying on because the only thing that I do write sometimes, because I write what I call in a soap opera style.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up, they're fading away now, but I grew up in the age of soap operas.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember my mother watching soap operas before I went to school. I can tell you what I saw on the television. She used to sit in my crib. And one time I said, she said, wait a minute, you were in the crib when that happened on that. So how do you remember that? But she sat in my crib right in front of the television.
Right.
So she could see it from the kitchen if she was cooking.
Uh-huh.
And I'm looking at this stuff, and I can tell you today, and people
say,
wow, man, older people, oh, because I'm not that young. Older people say, do you remember that? How old were you then? I said, I think I was in the crib.
Wow.
Very,
oh, my goodness.
Soap opera style of storytelling. And I write usually with a main plot, but I have a lot of little subplots going on in the story, which you will find in Ruth's Redemption, Son of the Preacher Man, and Greenwood and Archer, which is my third book.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
Thank you.
Congratulations on landing Moody Publishers for Ruth's Redemption. What was the process like?
Nothing but Jesus. That's all I can say.
What was the process like for off-the-shelf listeners who themselves are aspiring to land a publisher or a literary agent? What was that process like of landing a publisher for you?
The process was long. It didn't happen overnight. It was long and grueling, frustrating, but very rewarding in the end. And my one word is persistent.
Ah.
Don't give up.
Yeah, and I would say that, were you marketing, shopping your manuscript for, would you say, 6 months, a year before you actually got it picked up?
You're talking about Ruth in particular or other?
Yeah, Ruth's Redemption.
Redemption.
How long were you shopping the story before it got picked up?
Well, I had a literary agent.
Okay.
And it took me years to even get a literary agent, but I had a very good literary agent at Heartline Literary Agency. And Diana actually, we didn't shop. She gave it to Moody and they snapped it up.
Wow. So the process, the long process, was landing the literary agent. I know you're also the director
After I got the literary agent, it was almost 3 years before we got Ruth.
Oh.
Now, Ruth, because I had my other things, she was trying to submit she was submitting my other things to other publishers, and I still got a lot of rejections with the agent for almost 3 years. It took a long time. It's a very grueling process. Like I said, it didn't happen overnight. It took years to get the agent. Then it took years after that to get this first publishing deal.
Wow. You were persistent. And you're also the director of ministry at Lifeline Mission of the Gospel. When you write, Marlene, do you also aim to minister to readers? And if so, in what ways?
Yes, I do. And let me make a correction. The name of the ministry has been changed to Straight Gate Narrow Way Christian.
Oh, okay.
Okay. But it's the same. It's the same thing you're talking about. Yes, I do minister. Someone told me, I like the story, but it's too preachy. And I do minister through my writing, and that is my ministry, writing.
Okay. Okay.
So
I want
what I say, messages that I put out are messages that I would, if I were a pulpit preacher,
okay,
similar messages to what I would say it from a pulpit. But I'm not a pulpit preacher. I'm a writer. I'm awesome.
What steps, Marlene, are you taking to spread the word, to get the word out about Ruth's Redemption? There are so many, you know, it's good with the different formats that authors can, writers can publish their works in with the digital. You can do PDF, you can do ebook for various different ebook readers. You can do print, you can do print on demand, you can go through a traditional publisher, you can self-publish. There's just so many ways, and there's so many more books coming out. Although I'm finding a lot of the books are coming out in either like the vampire type sci-fi books, or you got a lot of street lit out that's
mm-hmm.
really popular right now. That being said, the market is, I think, more, it's always been crowded, but I think even more so now than it was previously, because you've got, years ago it was just traditional publishers that just were buying for bits of the market with between each other. Now it's them plus a bevy of self-published authors.
Absolutely.
What steps are you taking, Marlene, to spread the word about Ruth's Redemption and to build a reader base for your for Ruth's Redemption and your future books?
Well, Moody has a marketing department. Lift Every Voice Books has its own marketing people. So basically they strategize a marketing plan for the books. I follow their suit, but I also do things on my own. Like I had a radio interview on Gospel Highway 11.
Yes!
On the 18th.
Okay.
With my church, they have that spot, Bethel Deliverance.
Okay.
And I do things, and I get certain, and my agent, she helps also. She's gotten me interviews also, blog interviews. So basically I follow what they tell me to do or what they have for me to do, and I expand on whatever they do.
Okay. Because I've heard of Moody. They've been around for quite a number of years. Has the actual experience of being a published author who is now out promoting and marketing your own works, her own works, has that met with your dream of what you thought it would be like? And if not, you know, because I ask this question to a lot of off-the-shelf guests. I say, has the process of actually publishing a book, is most writers say that's the easy part. Has that, and then you got to market and promote it because you got to sell the book.
Yeah.
Has that process for you matched up with what your dreams of what that would be like when you published? Have they matched up? Are they the same? And if they are not, how has the actual experience of publishing and promoting and marketing a book differed from what you thought it would be like?
It is different because, like most people who don't know the business, I had very unrealistic expectations. You don't know, and things look very different from the outside when
mm-hmm.
you're. But once I start to learn the business, to learn how the publishing industry operated, I begin to get a more grounded view of what it was going to be like. And so by the time Ruth's Redemption was picked up, I had a fairly reasonable idea of what it was going to be like. Also, my agent was very good at teaching me what to expect and what not to expect. So I would say initially it was not the same, but it grew to be the same by the time I actually got a book deal, and I give
okay.
God the story for that. That he slow walked me like he did, as excruciating as it was. So Walkman, so that I would have a very reasonable expectation and understand that this is hard work. People think you just sit down at a typewriter. Now I'm aging myself, aren't I? You sit down at a computer and just type out a story and hand it to someone. And this is what people think, and I'm sure you can verify this. This is what people think who have never tried it, that you hand your manuscript to someone and it gets published and, boom, you're very wealthy.
I got to tell you, when I came into the industry, and I've been writing since I was 10, I thought the same thing.
Yeah,
I'm going back over 30 years. I've been writing for over 30 years. Yeah, I thought it was just you write a story and you hand it to a publisher, and everybody in the world loves it.
Yes, yes. When I got my first rejection letter, I cried. Oh, I cried like a baby. But it's, and I tell people that's one of the first things you better learn. Check that ego at the door.
Yes.
When you walk into the publishing industry, because your feelings will be hurt. You've worked so hard on a manuscript.
Yes.
Out your heart, blood, sweat, and tears, hours and hours. Because I can remember the first book I wrote, which was a nonfiction, I would come home from work, stay up to 2 and 3, falling asleep at the computer. I was so sleepy and then had to be back at work at 9 o'clock in the morning. So check your ego at the door and be prepared to work hard.
Yes.
This is not an easy thing like people think it is.
Ooh, goodness.
Most creative arts are not. It
no.
looks easy because, you know what, we're good and we make it look easy, but it's not. It's
yes.
not easy psychologically. It's not physically hard, but psychologically and mentally, it will work you.
Yeah, you oh, my goodness, and the promoting and the marketing and the negotiations and the contracts and the traveling and the, yeah. All of that. You better love more than writing a good story.
Yeah.
You better like the hustle, too.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, it takes work. It takes dedication. It takes devotion. It takes really wanting to do this thing, really wanting to give the time to it, being willing to give the time to it.
Yes.
And being willing to learn and take the criticism. I mean, the psychological impact alone is hard. It's like you do all of this and somebody tells you it's not good enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now
you know
have
what?
To bounce back from that slam, from that psychological slam, and say, okay, let me look and see. And this is how I taught myself. I learned from rejections. If they were willing to tell me what was wrong with a manuscript, then I would work on it and try to
fix
it. And that's how I learned to get better and better and better and better. And I'm going to be honest. I pray that I'm a good writer, but I know there's a whole lot of good writers out of there.
Yeah.
And a whole lot that's probably better than me, as good if not better. But it takes more than that.
Yes.
To make it in this business. It takes persistence. It takes.
Yes.
You have to put time and effort. And like you said, in more than just writing the story. It starts with writing the story.
Yes.
And it's finding an agent, finding a publisher, marketing your work, being willing to do what they tell you to do. Because a lot of things, you know, I'm not a marketing person. I'm really not a marketing person.
You know, they say most creatives, most artists just want to create, and a lot of artists. I've even heard musicians say they love making music, they love performing on stage. It's the business side of it they're not crazy about. But if you want, you have to get your work out there so people know about it.
If you want to make money, if you just want to write and hand it out to your friends, fine. But if you want to make money, you have to get into that marketing business piece of the industry. And it's not fun. And it can be hard work. But the payoff is worth it. If you stick
and then if you also make up the payoff, for me, I know when I used to hit the road a lot, the big payoff for me was just meeting the readers. Oh, I can't tell you what a gift that was. It's for me to connect with a reader is just,
yes.
I can't even, is matchless. So for me, that was just a big payoff. Again, the, you know, treating people like we're humans and not dollar signs. And even when doing social media, to really just want to get to know a person and not always want them to buy you. You want them to buy your book, but even if they don't, you're willing to engage in some type of a social connect relationship, however brief, with them.
Absolutely.
To me, that's a big payoff as well.
Now,
what
one
have
of the
you...
things that anchored me and held me together was when I realized that this was not really about me. This was not just me. That it was the hand of God that was going to work this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that took some of the weight off of me.
Mm-hmm.
I still had my part to do. I still had to work hard and do what I was going to do. But ultimately, I say, it's the favor of God that's going to break this thing or make it.
Mm.
I don't credit. I just do what I'm told. I have a saying. I say, this is Christ's banquet. I'm just sitting at the table.
Wow.
I'm working for the kingdom. I have a kingdom message in everything I write, be it contemporary, chick lit, or whatever. I write for God. I am his author. And this is his banquet.
Okay.
So
what?
I do what I'm supposed to do, but it will be his play.
Okay. What have you learned about yourself while creating Ruth's Redemption that you didn't know before you sat down to write the book?
I would say that history could be turned into beautiful stories.
Mm.
I always had a slight interest in historical events.
Mm-hmm.
But I always wrote contemporary, and for some reason I always thought a historical would be too hard, too much work. So
okay.
I learned about myself that I could do it.
Okay.
That I could do that, and that I didn't have to cubbyhole myself into one particular type of writing. I say that I want to be the Sammy Davis Jr. I don't know how old you are, but the last time I said this to a young man who was 24 years old, he said, "Who's Sammy Davis Jr.?" I'm like, okay.
I know what you're talking
about. You must be getting
old. I know
what
you're talking about. The Candyman can.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it, because in my generation, you don't know who Sammy Davis is.
And
all the people around
yeah.
him was like, "You don't know who Sammy Davis," but he really didn't.
Yeah,
he was a Caucasian young man too. But still, my girlfriend, her black daughter, she said, "Well, she might have to think a minute or two before she remember who he is." But anyway, getting back to the topic, I say I would like to be the Sammy Davis Jr. of the literary world.
Okay,
he did it all. He
yes.
could sing, he could dance, he could
yes.
do impressions. He was a nightclub act. He was an actor.
Yeah.
He was on
yeah.
Broadway. He was in the movies, on television.
Yeah.
He did it all. Well, that's the way I want my career to be. I want to write mysteries. I want to write love stories. I want to write historicals. I want to write contemporaries. I want to write an epic. I want to do it all. I don't want to be cubbyholed into just writing one type of thing.
Okay.
I want historicals, the contemporaries, all types of writing. And I
okay.
hope I do it well.
Good for you, Marlene. Good for you. As we come down to the last 6 minutes of today's show, I wanted to ask you, say to you first, your book cover, I think it effectively captures the period, again, the 1800s, that Ruth's Redemption, the story, is set in. Who designed your cover, and did you have any input on the final cover?
Lift Every Voice, Moody, they designed the cover. I thought I liked it also. They did show it to me, and they did ask for my input.
Oh, okay, that's good. So if you wanted to make a few changes, you could do so.
Definitely.
Do you?
As a matter of fact, I did make several suggestions, and they took all of them.
Oh, great! That is really good. Because sometimes the publisher won't do that. But that's very good that they did listen to you. And that's one
good thing about them. They work together as a team.
Okay.
We all work together as a team because we all wanted this to be a quality product.
Okay. The Civil War is a very I mean, all around the country, they have the reenactments. I know I covered one for a newspaper at the Chamonix Park here outside of Bensalem. But it's huge, the Civil War. Do you now, or do you plan on incorporating some speaking events, maybe where you speak at Civil War reenactments, et cetera, to help market your book?
I have no plans to do that. Actually, well, actually, Ruth's Redemption is pre-Civil War. It's about 30-some years before the Civil War.
Okay.
So I really have no plans to, but if I'm invited, I would certainly come.
Okay. Can you tell us about some other spots on your, either your book tour, if it's still ongoing, or any upcoming radio, any type of internet chats, any type of speaking events, book club chats that you're going to be participating in, if you could give us the location and the date and the time so off-the-shelf listeners can support you?
I don't have anything happening in the month of May, which is unusual. This will be the first month coming up that I haven't had anything. Everything has pretty much happened from February to now.
Okay.
And May is winding down. I do, however, have a workshop at the Lancaster's Christian Writers Workshop in Lititz, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
It's on the 16th of June.
All right.
However, my second book comes out June 1st, so right now we're shifting everything towards that.
Okay.
Which I will be talking about both Ruth and Son of a Preacher Man.
Okay.
I think everything they're scheduling now, they're sort of quelling for May, giving me a breath. And then we kick off for June for Son of a Preacher Man.
Wow. And then hopefully that, as you come out with new books, it'll pick up, you just keep picking up steam, picking up steam, picking up
steam.
Yeah,
and when I go from one thing to the other, I'm going to just talk about all of them.
There you go. There you go. Where can off-the-shelf listeners get copies of Ruth's Redemption?
You can get copies at any major book distributor, Barnes & Nobles, Amazon.com, Walmart. Now, I'm not sure if Walmart has it in store, but I know Walmart has it online. You can go on at those places, or you can go into the stores. If the stores don't have it, please ask them and they'll order it for you.
Yeah, I always tell people that if you don't see the book on the shelf and you want it, you don't have to walk out thinking, well, they don't have it. They can order it from one of the large distributors like Ingram or Baker & Taylor. Just tell them, I want to get Ruth's Redemption by Marlene Banks. They can order it for you. They'll call you and let you know when it's in, and you can come and pick it up.
Books a Million. You can also go online at Lift Every Voice Books. You can order it from there. And I think they kick you over to Amazon, though.
Go ahead.
Any major book distributor has it at this point. You can get it electronically also.
Okay. We've got less than 2 minutes, and I wanted to ask, if somebody wanted you to speak at an organization they were affiliated with, how should they contact you?
You can go to my website, marlenebanks.com, and you can make a request. Email me with a request and give me your contact information, and I'll get back to you, and we can set something up.
Okay. So just go to your website. Can you give us the URL again, please?
MarleneBanks.com. Just type in MarleneBanks.com.
MarleneBanks.com. MarleneBanks.com. Just go into, get her contact, send her your name, your information, the name of the event you want her to speak at, the date, time, et cetera, and then she'll get back with you.
Certainly will. And also you can follow me on Facebook, author Marlene Banks, and I'm on Shout Life.
Okay. Are you on any other social?
Eventually I'll get on Twitter, but I haven't had the nerve to brave the Twitter waters yet, but I think by the time Son of a Preacher Man is out, I've gotten my nerve up for Twitter.
So Facebook and Shout Life, those are the social media networks where you can find Marlene Banks. Just put in author Marlene Banks on Facebook, and then at Shout Life, you can look her up there as well. And again, her website is Marlene, M-A-R-L-E-N-E-B-A-N-K-S. Again, that's M-A-R-L-E-N-E-B-A-N-K-S. LeneBanks.com. You check her out there. We just have a few seconds left. Again, please go support Ruth's Redemption by Marlene Banks. If you don't see it in the bookstore, just ask the clerk for it. They can order it from you, for you from the distributors. It's in print book form, and it's also in ebook form, and you can also learn more about her books, her excerpts, and Marlene by visiting her website at MarleneBanks.com. And please go pick up a copy of my new book, Love Pour Over Me, and it will be out in print in a couple of weeks. It is now out in digital format or ebook format.
Oh, I'm going to get that. That sounds interesting. I'm getting that.
Oh, you can also get a PDF copy of Love Pour Over Me. So please. Give Marlene Banks your support, Ruth's Redemption, and I would absolutely love your support for Love Pour Over Me. If you go out and grab a copy today, you can get a copy right there at your computer, same way as you can for Ruth's Redemption. Thank you so much, Marlene, for being here with us. Thank you to our many, many off-the-shelf listeners. We appreciate those of you who make a point of tuning in every Saturday, and for those of you who catch Off the Shelf throughout the week, because the shows stay up 24/7, so you can get lots and lots of listeners, and you can listen to the shows over and over, and the shows that are in the archive as well. I wish you so much success, Marlene. It's been a pleasure interviewing and connecting with you, and I wish you tremendous success with each of your books.
That's with yours also.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. To all of our listeners, remember, you're so incredibly valued and so truly blessed. Go out and create a marvelous day for yourself today. See you back here next Saturday, 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Bye for now. Marlene, I'll shoot you an email.